session number 23447, Reel 8.
Mr. Waller, Reel 8. Now, we got to the point where at the Battle of Alam Halfa, where, August 42, where you'd opened up on the German tanks with considerable effect, and they'd returned fire with a machine gun, riddled your shield, but not got through the second.
And
you were okay. What happened next?
Well, we continued firing at other tanks. Exactly how many we've knocked out, I don't know. I think the score between the four of us was, I can't remember whether it was 17 or 37, but it was quite an appreciable number. But the trouble was, when you're dug in a gun pit, you've only got a limited traverse on a gun. You've only got, say, 30 degrees one way or 30 the other. So once you get outside that, there's nothing you can do. So they went to the right, where our other gun was, and they pulled up, and they threw a grenade in. We saw two of them get out, and obviously been told to trot back to the rear, you know, because they were prisoners. But the other two were continuing firing, the two that were behind us, by which time they'd gone round both sides of us. Now, had we been on the flat, you could have lifted the trails of the gun and turned it. In a pit, you couldn't. You had this limit of 30 degrees either way. So once they got outside that and they went round the back, we were virtually overrun. So then the 25-pounders that were behind us laid down a barrage. Unfortunately, we were in the middle of the German tank, so there was everything, shrapnel was flying around all over the place. So we just gave up then. I mean, there was nothing we could do. We just laid down in the gun pit. We reckon we'd done our job as much as we could, and we just laid down.
What about the tanks dug in behind you, the British tanks?
Oh, they came forward. They charged over because they made a break on the left after they got round the anti-tank guns, you see. So they charged down, and there was quite a tank battle ensued, you know, a lot of our tanks got knocked out, but at least they stopped them at breaking through. And some of the other tanks were firing, and the 25-pounders were laying down this barrage. But what we were worried about, we were laying down, it was only about 3 foot deep, so was either infantry following the tanks, and you could also hear the tank trains going clank, 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 that if they spotted you, all they had to do was drive over your gun pit and squash the lot. So we just lay there and held our breath, looking, sort of half looking up, because if you suddenly saw a tank, then you had to jump out of the pit quit and roll out the way, or lay in the middle so that the tracks didn't catch you. And we had to lay there until this barrage was going on and on. It seemed like hours, but I suppose it must have been, what, 2 or 3 hours. So we didn't know. We're laying in this pit, so we didn't...
And no German tank actually did approach you?
No, we could hear them clanking away round us. And I still think to this day that one of them spotted us. I don't know whether it was because when the sun was setting, he was blinded and the dust from the shell explosion, or whether the fact that this one we knocked out, when these two ran, our Bren gunner should have opened up, because they said, you know, tank crews are just as important as tanks. So if they're knocked out, you shoot the gun crews. And so he didn't. I don't know whether he was keeping his head down, but I'm shouting to him, Sid, look, and he didn't. Now, whether they sort of, they let them get on the back of his tank, whether it was that, I don't know. I really don't know, but for some reason, he didn't open up. He was... had his gun pointed at us, and he fired this burst of machine gun fire, which, as I say, did his damage. but then didn't repeat it. And I think, well, was it a bit of, you were decent to our blokes, and I don't know. It's all in the imagination, you know.
So what happened next?
So we kept laying there until, you know, we didn't know whether it was our tanks, their tanks, what the hell was going on, because we're down below ground level, laying down. And by that time, it was starting to get dark, and you could hear the sounds of the battle receding, you know, there wasn't so much gunfire, and it got further away, and there wasn't any barrage bursting all round us. And it sort of, as soon as it started getting dusk and getting towards dark, things got quiet. And then all of a sudden we heard a noise, and we turned around, you know, we thought it was a night patrol of infantry, but it wasn't. It was our officer, platoon officer, crept out, saying, "Is there anybody still alive?" And we said, "Yes, we're all here." Right. And he signalled up a vehicle. I think it was a Jeep, if I remember rightly. And we put the gun on tow. We got in the back of the Jeep, were on the gun, and they towed us back to where Platoon HQ was. And we just collapsed on the ground and went to sleep. We were.
And now, I should have asked this before. Were these positions you were defending, were they the ones in the Heimat, the high ground, or were they when you were...
No, we were on the flat ground.
This is actually when you were at Alam Halfa.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. I just wanted to check that. And how did you feel when you got out? That was a pretty close escape.
Yes, completely exhausted. And sort of tired out, you know, sort of, oh, God, you know, sort of breathe a sigh of relief that you were still there, still alive, and... You just put your head down. You weren't even worried about something to eat. We were just so whacked out, and we just went off to sleep.
And what happened next? Did you realise how much that had been a successful battle that you'd held, Rommel?
Well, no. We knew so many of ours. We could see the ones that we'd been firing at, but it was in a limited area. The next morning, of course, got the shout to us saying to it, daybreak, had some breakfast, and then they said, right, go back to your same gun pit. So we went back, got dropped the gun off, took it back on the Leopardi, dropped the gun off, got in a position, the Leopardi disappeared, and then we started looking round, and we could see all the knocked out tanks that were around.
Of both sides, I presume.
Yeah. And then a carrier, Bren gun carrier, came flying out with REs in it. And what they were doing, they had sandbags, obviously with dynamite or whatever explosive was in them, and they were lighting them and dropping them in the tanks so that they couldn't be recovered, dropping them inside the German tanks so they couldn't be recovered. And... Bill Ash and I said, right, we'll have a look at the one that's in front of us, the first one. We fired the first shot, got it. So we went up, and what you do on the back of the turret is a big steel container where they keep their kit. So we open that up, and that's the first thing you do, see if there's any food or any souvenirs. And we took out the stuff that was there. And I whipped the pennant, the tank commander's pennant off the tank, a bit singed from that, but I thought, well, that's a good souvenir, I'll have that. And I said, there's a hell of a pong around here, Bill. And we looked inside the tank, and all there was from a pair of legs up to there.
To the stomach.
Yeah, in one seat, you know, the driver's seat, and all old bits of it, you know, it must have been the rest of the crew. And you know, I said, oh, it turned me off my mule, I think I'm getting there. So we went back to our position then. And then in the distance, we could see a recovery team trying to hitch up a German tank. And a scout car came flying up, and the officer in it said, I want you to open. They're recovering that tank out there. Can't you see it? I said, yeah, we can see it. It must have been best part of a mile away. He said, well, I want you to fire on it immediately. I said, we won't do any good at that mile. I said, he said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, nothing would penetrate. In any case, he's knocked out. They're recovering it. He said, yes, but the recovery crew. I said, well, a solid shot, unless you hit him between the eyes, it won't do any good. You need a high explosive. He said, well, use a high explosive. I said, we haven't got any. We've never been issued with any. And we won't. We never issued that until the war ended. We only had solid shot. And he said, well, I'm ordering you to fire. I said, well, look, my command, company commander and platoon commander's given me instructions 300 yards. I said, if I open up, it's not going to do any good, and all it's going to do is give our position away. I said, what happens if they launch another attack? I said, we're pinpointed. So we had a difference of opinion. He said that he was going to... he wanted me to open up, and I said, well, with all due respect, but I said, I'm the anti-tank gunner, you're not. I said, you're a scout car. So he said, well, I'll report you to your company commander. I said, well, you do that, mate. So he went off in a huff, and that was it. And I did find out later that he had reported me, and there was court-martial on the offing. But apparently they'd we'd got so many MMs sent up for our platoon, and so they said, well, as long as they cancelled my one, that would that satisfy honour? So he said yes. So, oh, because by that time I was up to corporal, and that got busted down again. Over.
Was that over that incident?
Yeah. So, but honour was satisfied.
How did you feel about that? Because that seems totally unfair.
Yeah, well, yeah, sod you, mate. I quite honestly, the day after the battle, I was just that pleased at still being in one piece that I wasn't really bothered. Get your knees brown, sort of business, get some service in, you know, you sort of...
Had you been a corporal long?
Oh, no, it got made up when we were back at MENA, you know, and they were making up the gun teams again.
But you were still with, so there were two corporals on your gun team, or...?
No, we got switched around then, you see.
So you weren't with Sid and...
No, Sid never came back. We don't know what happened to him.
Sorry, you worked with Bill and Alf.
Alf, we got transferred, yeah.
So you got a new team.
Yeah.
So what happened next, and after the Battle of Alam Halfa? After you'd lost the MM and...
Yeah, well, there was a lull in the fighting then. Rommel obviously decided that he wasn't going to make a breakthrough. And there was a lull in the fighting, and then there was the probes going on prior to the actual Battle of Alamein. I had one good thing. They had, because we were only 60 miles from Cairo, they had a lottery, and my name came out, and I got a 48-hour leave in Cairo. The only leave I got to...
What did you do when you went to Cairo? I mean, how would you spend your leave?
Eating and drinking. I won't say whoring, but...
Whereabouts, I mean, where would you stay? Have they got...
They booked a hotel. The Army Welfare Services, they gave us a brochure, and there were a number of hotels, and they put a cross against the one that you had, and you just went there, and you had about 18 months' pay. You hadn't drawn any pay for 18 months, so you drew the lot out and blew it in 48 hours, and... The system was you got into the hotel, stripped off, got into a bath, and a nice little Egyptian fella came in, Dobie, took his stuff away to wash. Another one came in with a case full of KD to sell you, and when you got that, you then went out in the town. The first thing you did was went to a decent restaurant, and we ordered a meal, what we fancied, and we ordered it three times. Fresh food we'd not had, and kept drinking John Collins with it.
John Collins is
whiskey. It's whiskey. I don't know how what the mixture is, but it's a mixture of something with whiskey based. And
who were you with? You keep saying we.
Yeah, one or two of the others. I can't remember their names. They're in the photo that I've got and that appeared in Tim's book. People that were there, and we had a very jolly 48 hours.
Did you get very drunk?
Well, more or less, yes. Had lucid moments and thoroughly enjoyed it. Got back, and somebody said, we got back in the afternoon, and somebody said, did you enjoy your leave? And I said, yes. She said, good, because we're going in tonight. That was the night the Battle of Alamein started.
That was October.
Yeah.
What do you remember of the Battle of Alamein?
Well, initially we were down south in the southern sector. I think we were supposed to, it was classified as a diversionary or feint attack. And we were up against the Italian Folgore Division, which, contrary to the general opinion of Italian troops, were really tough nuts. And we went in. We got in between, we got through the first minefield, we're in the gap.
What do you remember of it? Do you remember it in any detail?
Well, I mean, we got in between the gap, and then our Portee got hit in the engine.
What by?
Whatever, I don't know. I mean, whether it was a solid shot or... I think it must have been a solid shot, because there wasn't a big explosion. So we just heard bang, and something hit the front of the truck, and it just folded up then. So we were then useless, because we couldn't manhandle, drag the anti-tank gun. So we left that, and we joined up with the infantry company, and spent that first night as infantry attacking strong points.
What do you remember of that?
It was very hairy, because they were well dug in, and they had I don't know whether it was deliberate or in the confusion, but you had some of them coming out to surrender, and then suddenly somebody would open up and they would drop down. Whether it was, I say, deliberate or not, I don't know, but we suffered quite a few casualties for that. Bill Ash by that time was with me, and we went in, and we were about platoon strength, about 30 of us, and suddenly we got came under mortar fire. Within 5 minutes, Bill and I were the only two left standing. All the others had either been killed or wounded.
What was it like under heavy mortar fire?
Very frightening, because and like a shell, you don't really hear them coming. Not that you can do much when you hear a shell, but you get some warning, you get down. But with mortars, they just come down, particularly in the middle of the night, night time as it was, and just bonk, 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 and away to go. And you get rather large gaps appearing in the amount of personnel.
And these were Italian mortars or German mortars?
Italian, yeah, yeah.
What happened next?
Well, the fighting went on, trying to clear the strong points, went on through the night until the next day.
Did the strong points have a sort of name or,
No, I mean, they just...
The positions, I mean...
Just positions, yeah. I mean, when you say strong point, you see, what they would do would be, say, dig a deeper pit. If they got corrugated iron or wood or something, they would cover the top, but... They were usually open, but the Italians and the Germans did have a tendency to cover the chops over. We just done open pits, you see, and you had the machine guns and mortars mounted in them, so what you had to do was to try and clear them before you could get through. The ordinary, shall we say, rifleman of a defending position, would be strung out in position, but it was mainly the ones you had to deal with were the machine gun nests or the mortars. Try and clear them out
the way. And how would you go about it? What was the best tactics you used to clear a, say, machine gun post?
Well, I mean, the best thing was running at them in short, or spreading out and running at them in short bursts. You know, run so far, drop down, and people behind you will be giving you covering fire, and then you would run so far, drop down, then they would do the same and attack from different angles so that you try to get through. And then when you got near enough, if you've got a automatic weapon, you open fire, or you use them. If it was an open pit, you could use toss a grenade in, you use grenades. And this went on more or less practically all through the night, because, as you know from all the books and films, you know, the barrage was going on the whole time.
What was the barrage like? I mean,
it was tremendous. You just couldn't believe it when they opened up. And I mean, nobody sort of said to us, we're going to open up with 700 guns or anything like that. I mean, they just said, we should be putting down a barrage, which, normally you thought, well, that could mean 20 guns or anything. And when this lot opened up, I mean, the whole sky along was sort of lit up with these flashes, and it was, I think a little bit of World War One stuff that was, the barrage, and it just went on.
What was the noise like?
Oh, absolutely tremendous, You always, in retrospect, you think, why didn't they give us earplugs? Because didn't have such refinements in those days.
So you're attacking these Italian strong points most of the night?
Yeah. And then eventually when, they were subdued, and, I mean, obviously they were really outgunned and outnumbered. But, I mean, a defender's always in the best position, so... I know the Queen's, the 131 Brigade, in the 7th Armoured, there was 22nd Armoured Brigade and 131 Brigade, which was the heavy infantry, which was the Queen's, and they took very heavy losses. But I say this went on all during the night, and by the next morning it was, when I say over, it was mopping up, the battle had more or less gone on through the night and the early morning, and then finished, and we were going around checking the empty trenches and strong points. And
had they actually retreated, or?
Well, most of them were either hors de combat, shall we say, or prisoners had given up, it was, because the Germans had pinched all their transport, so they couldn't get away, unless they went on foot, and they weren't going to get far on foot. So most of the Italian, it was just a parachute division, most of them were either taken prisoner or wounded or killed.
And what happened next?
And then we went round checking the positions, looking round and picking up the inevitable souvenir.
What sort of things were the most coveted souvenirs? I mean, what were you looking for?
What, in souvenirs?
Yeah, when you...
Nothing. It was mainly... you were very careful, because you didn't... With booby traps.
Were you aware of the question of booby traps?
Yeah, you'd come across them, that you were very careful what you took and what you didn't take. So
how would you decide?
Rule of thumb, really, you sort of... we picked up stuff that was tended to be scattered about, In other words, if you saw a nice-looking box that might be... You didn't touch that, you see. You might think, what's in that? But it was a very wise policy not to do it, But you had... the things I picked up were mainly things, like... Italian flag, postcards, things like that. Nothing of value. Their food ration was even worse than ours, so you didn't touch their food, not the Italian.
Did you get a chance to get any sleep?
Oh, the next day, yes. The next, not first on. We, you know, more or less right the way through, because we'd been told to get our heads down before the attack started. So you got that. But from then on, once the attack started, it was carry on through the night until the next day, and you're just sort of weary and tired. And eventually, when the other troops came up to relieve you, and all the armour moved up, and you sort of pulled back, and that's when you got your head down. You know.
Now, after Alamein, the first couple of days of Alamein, there was a sort of continuous advance for a fair while.
Yeah, well, we were in the 7th Armoured Div. We were then moved from down south up to the northern end of it, ready for the break, ready for when the infantry made the gap. The idea was that once they broke through, the armour would go through. So we moved up there, and it was still battling on up there, but we were more or less holding, waiting back. I mean, we were down south, including the attack and beforehand. We were down there, something like about 4 or 5 days. But it was about the 10 days before they made the gap for the breakthrough. The big breakthrough, yeah. So we were sitting back a little bit, waiting for the breakthrough, and sort of recouping from our diversionary attack. And then...
Had you got a new portee, or got the
old? Oh, yes, yeah, we got a new portee right then.
So what happened next then?
Well, eventually when the breakthrough, the order was to go, and then off we went, and the tanks went through first, we followed behind them, and once we got through, then they called it swanned out, you broke out and split up and went off into different columns.
And what do you remember of the advance? What was it like for you?
Well, once the actual battle was over, it was just on the move. It was great, because you weren't running into any opposition, They established a line, but there was no, shall we say, second and third line behind them or anything like that. I mean, once you were clear of the minefields and the fixed positions, you got the open desert in front of you. And away you went.
What was it like driving through the desert? Because we've not talked about that much.
Yeah.
You'd had your training, we mentioned that. But what about now in practice? Would you take a turn on the wheel?
Oh, yes, yes. Well, it was strange because, people's idea of the desert, they see films of the Sahara and the rolling sand dunes. But it's not all like that. You get areas of very soft sand, because most of our vehicles were only two-wheel drives and rear wheel at that. And so it was quite a common thing, you'd hit a patch of soft sand and you'd sink in and you get the old metal sand channels off and start digging. Then you get to quite a fairly hard bit of ground, and then you could get it onto a rocky bit where you had to be careful, because if you hit that at speed, you would break your springs. So it was, a changing thing. And I can remember when we were further up, when it poured with rain, it becomes almost like mud. If you had a heavy vehicle like a portee, what did they weigh? Most probably, with the gun on and crew and that, and ammunition, about 8 ton, that you could, if you weren't careful, you could get into a slide and start sliding sideways on the hard baked sand, No, it was driving conditions. The biggest problem was the dust, because it's flying up, and you're trying to keep follow up, and the dust is coming up in your face. And with that happening, you can't always spot where the soft patches are or the rocky bits, and that's where the mishaps occurred.